Okay, that was a bit of a weak start there, but we'll start over. Good morning, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We just had a microphone die. So there's leprechauns or gremlins or something in the room. This is our first meeting in person in 2 years, and it's our first hybrid meeting ever. So we're working through logistics. So please be patient. And I want to start off with, if we can go to the next slide. While we're doing that, if you're on Zoom, please, you need to be muted and you need to have your camera off. And we will gather questions at the end of the meeting through the chat and whatever questions come up during the room. So who are we? The Aerospace and Defense Forum. We are an 11-year-old organization, global organization, aerospace and defense leadership group, community, 2,400 professionals. And in the past, we've met in person. And it's really a lot about learning, education, supporting each other, and networking. So communication, collaboration, commerce relative to the business of aerospace and defense. There's 9 chapters: Los Angeles, San Fernando, Santa Clarita, South Bay, Orange County, San Diego, Arizona, Dallas-Fort Worth, and the newest one, Ventura County. We conduct, when normal times are occurring, monthly meetings and presentations. Includes panels, with a panel today, includes tours with industry leaders at local companies. And I'm getting the not in the screen, so now I'm in the screen. Thank you. And again, it's a community of people working together to solve similar issues. And if we can go to the next slide. Again, the webinar guidelines, please make sure your camera is off, your audio is muted, active speaker view, and again, if you have questions, please put them into the chat and we will gather them up and get them answered at the end. Next slide. Okay, and now I want to give a few minutes to our sponsor, Santa Clarita Valley Economic Development Corporation, the Santa Clarita chapter, host and sponsor. I'm going to turn over to Holly.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here in person or on the webinar. It's really exciting to have people back in person. As Eric said, this is our first meeting back, and the EDC has been really pleased to be a sponsor of the ADF since we began this chapter, like supporting all of the aerospace companies here in the Santa Clarita Valley. It is one of our main sectors, and we are looking forward to lots of good things ahead in that sector as travel reopens and people start doing things and we start having seeing recovery and improvement and hopefully resurgence in the aerospace sector. And so the Economic Development Corporation is a public-private partnership that is designed to help grow jobs in the Santa Clarita Valley. And that means we're bringing new businesses here. We are one of the growing areas of Los Angeles County. We are the most business-friendly area of Los Angeles County. And we're here to help your businesses find employees. So you're going to hear a lot about that from our speakers today, about the strategies that they're using. We host a job board called liveworkscb.com that is a free service to our businesses here in the Santa Clarita Valley. So we're trying to help everybody work through the challenges today of recruiting and finding talent. And then we also help our businesses as they are looking to expand or other problems and troubleshooting that they are dealing with. That they learn more about, you know, how we help them through all of those challenges. We currently are we have a survey in the field right now. If you've not taken that survey, please do so. You've probably seen it in our newsletter. If not, you can contact me. But we're really trying to take a pulse of what's happening in the Santa Clarita Valley with our businesses. What are the challenges they're facing? And, you know, sort of what is this new generation of work and a new era of how we work as we come out of the pandemic? What is that going to look like and what are the new needs that are facing and challenges facing our businesses? So please do that. If you don't, you can contact me. You can find all of our contact info for the Economic Development Corporation, including Sue Ariano, who is our business assistance director, that you can find all of that on our website, scbedc.org. Great. Thank you very much. Eric, back to you.
Thank you, Holly. And it's important to note that Holly and her team have been instrumental in the success of this forum, especially as we struggled through COVID. And before we move on, I just want to encourage people to come to these meetings. I recognize that we will likely have hybrid meetings in the future, but it's really important that people get out and start to continue to eyeball network. I've met people this morning I haven't seen in 2 years, 3 years. So that's really important as we work together and improve our businesses. Next slide, please. Okay, I'm going to introduce the panelists now, and I want to thank them sincerely for the amount of time they've put in preparing for this and their willingness to be part of this discussion. And I'll start with Kimberly Antione. She is the Director of HR and Business Partner at ITT Aerospace Controls. She's an accomplished HR resources executive, vast domestic and global knowledge and experience, building and directing high-performing HR teams in diverse industry environments. She's got a bachelor's degree of science from human resources management, began her career with Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. She spent 12 years, seven of which were overseas, working as a key member of the management team. Upon returning to the States, she continued in the DoD sector before taking her talent and experience to other industries, including IT, cosmetics, education, and financial services before relocating to California in 2013. She spent the last 4 years at ITT Aerospace in Valencia, where she serves as the Director of Human Resources for the Aerospace Connect and Control Technologies business. Her ability to make sound, ethical business decisions while optimizing employee relations and supporting key business partners has led to her continued success. So I want to welcome Kimberly. And we're going to move on to Deborah Wagner. And Deborah is a Senior Director of Business Development for Peak Technical Staffing. With over two decades of partnering with HR teams to assist in meeting their business and growth demands, Deborah's accomplished this by partnering with people in providing cross-country HR solutions to companies nationwide in the areas of executive search, contingent staffing, talent acquisition, staff retention services, and talent acquisition recruitment. She works closely with her clients, assisting with identifying strategic staffing needs. She supports a wide range of industries, including aerospace, space, manufacturing, software development, the entertainment industry, and many others. She has been supporting the aerospace and defense sector for 25-plus years. She served in several roles, branch manager and director of technical services in her past. With her customer service solutions-oriented approach, Deborah has developed long-term relationships with her clients, consistently able to offer support and solutions to her clients' needs. So thank you and welcome to Deborah. Gary Sanger is founder and president of Sanger Associates. His past experience includes president of the executive recruiting firm of R.J. Watkins & Company, executive vice president of the international consulting firm of Wright Management Consultants. Previously, he held senior management positions with Security Pacific Corporation, Citibank, and American Hospital Supply Corporation. Gary was involved with numerous senior engagements in these organizations and other client companies. He currently serves as a board member of the College of the Canyons Foundation, Santa Clarita Valley Economic Development Corporation, and a longtime member of ProVisors. He has served on the board of the Industry Education Council of California. He was a member of the Tech Invistage and served as Big Brother. Gary has served for 25 years as a board member of the Boys and Girls Club of Santa Clarita and is a past board member of the Single Mothers Outreach. So I want to welcome and thank our panelists. Yeah, it's okay to clap. All right. Now, at this point, I'm going to go through how we got to where we are from 2019. Just a brief overview with some facts that I have brought forward. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So what has changed since 2019, and why have these things changed? It's important to understand how we got to where we are. Next slide, please. So I was working at Frelock during COVID and during the shutdown, and I'm assuming and I believe that most businesses experienced what I experienced, that we faced worker shortages and we had to follow these changing laws, and the laws were changing. The COVID laws were changing regularly, and you had to keep adapting, and you had to keep making changes, and you had to be flexible to remain open or you couldn't get product out the door. So there were things that were allowed and not always allowed, and it wasn't clear to us what the regulations were and how we were supposed to comply. So that was a constant, regular battle. And then we were faced with remote schooling. So employees had to stay home because their kids were at home. So they had to be with their children. And they couldn't find daycare. And some of that worked out well, and some of that didn't work out well for some of the parents. And many employees worked remotely, and they hadn't before, and they liked it. And they thought, this isn't so bad. Maybe I would like to do more of this. And we backfilled where possible. At one point, we had, in operations as an example, 125 employees, and we had as many as 25 employees missing every day. We took a head count every day to see who was there and to see what we could get done. And many businesses didn't make it. They closed. Next slide, please. So for families and people that were experiencing all this, savings rates went up. Savings rates from 2019 and through the pandemic went from an average of 7% up to 34%. So people literally saved more money. They spent less money. They didn't go out as much. They didn't do so many things. They were getting unemployment and sick pay benefits from the government when they stayed home. They were able to pay off debt. And interesting, they managed to pay down debt, but then in 2021, people started feeling more confident. Debt went up. However, most of it was tied to their homes. Their equity went up. So they took equity out of their homes. People are feeling more comfortable with their finances. And that's part of why they're not reentering the workforce. And now savings rate dropped back down to 6.4% in January. Customers and consumers are spending. Hopefully that's good news. People are going to be spending and think, okay, I have to get back into the workforce. Next slide, please. So there's been discussions about the great resignation, the great recognition, the great reflection. People were at home reflecting, having time to stop and think. I know, unfortunately, people that have passed from COVID. I think everybody knows somebody that's either been very sick or passed, and that has hit home with people. It's made them think about what's really important. So they develop this foundation of change and reasons to make changes. So I gathered some of this data yesterday at the Wall Street Journal. 4.2 million more people are out of the workforce as of last month prior to the pandemic. 2.1 million people, fewer people, are on company payrolls versus prior to the pandemic. There's 11 million open jobs across the country. The number of self-employed people is roughly 10 million, I'm one of those, versus 8.3 million prior to the pandemic. And many people have new expectations about what it's going to take for them to be a good employee or be interested in your company. And then there's some people that are just not coming back. They've said, I've saved some money. I've learned how to lower my costs. I'm not coming back to work. And this is the backdrop of the challenges we're facing. And I'm going to ask the panel if there's anything they want to add to this on how we got to where we are. All right. Well, let's go to the next slide, please. Oh, Gary's got it. Here we go.
I think this word hybrid has been a big change. I mean, you think about the moms, the working moms, who's the wife, who is the breadwinner perhaps, or number two. And above all, she's the mom of the kids and the homeschooling aspect of it. So the hybrid world, I think has changed the most as it relates to the workforce. And you get some of the essential businesses that frankly say, sorry, we're not going to do that. You got to be here. You know, so you get some of the old school look at it. But I think the hybrid change of you don't have to be in that office all the time, I think that's the biggest change, Eric, as far as what we've seen here in the last 2.5-3 years.
All right. Thank you, Gary. All right. So now we'll move on to questions for the panel. So the first question is, what are the new set of expectations of the 2022 workforce? And Gary just touched upon some of them. So we'll start with Kimberly because Kimberly is a customer. She's a customer of the other two people on the panel. So what are your thoughts, Kimberly, about what are you seeing of employees you're trying to hire and your existing employees? What are their expectations for the work environment?
Thank you, Eric. Well, it's definitely a candidate market. It's incredibly competitive. And as Gary said, it's not just the hybrid. I think the other key word there is flexibility. A lot of people are looking for flexibility. Unfortunately, in our industry, a lot of those positions, this is where we're, you know, have a uphill battle, is we can't be flexible in some of the positions. But the ones we are, I think we really need to focus on, you know, being as flexible as possible. I don't think people are looking necessarily for a fully remote schedule, but I think they are looking to just to hear the word flexible and some type of hybrid option is what I'm seeing. You know, also I think we need to think outside the box in hiring, you know, before you wanted to hit every bullet on that job description. I think now we need to kind of pivot and say, well, this person has these qualities, but I really think I can work with this. And I think that's the position we're in now, is that we're going to have to be not just flexible in schedules and people coming in, but flexible in our candidate and what we're looking for and what we think we can build from that individual.
Good morning, everyone. One of the things that we are noticing is demand for flexibility, but also spinning off of what you were talking about, we're having to present candidates that are not 90 to 100% meeting the bullet points of what our customers are looking for. We're now looking at educating our customers. This is what's out there. We've got people that are 70 to 80% of what you're looking for. Can you work with this? And so we're asking our customers to be flexible with us and work with us. And we're also seeing higher demand in salaries. We're seeing things, what I was mentioning to Kimberly earlier, is even in the aerospace industry, we're seeing clients of ours adding benefits to make the positions at their company more exciting or attractive. For example, unlimited vacation time, which was a new one for me in the aerospace industry, but I'm seeing it now. So these are some of our challenges, even for us in the staffing industry. We're spending a lot more time recruiting and trying to fulfill our customers' needs. So we're having to be creative. And sometimes we just, you know, if the client's asking us for a purple squirrel, we have to let them know we're sorry. This doesn't exist. Maybe this is really two positions, and having to retool the job descriptions and create a new role. So these are some of the things that we are seeing happening right now. And, you know, this is how the market is. And California has been challenging, but we're doing our best to serve everyone.
So you're going to keep your microphone. It's a pleasure to be here. The war for talent. Now, I'm preoccupied a bit in my mind when I think about what's going on with Ukraine and the terrible invasion by the Russians. The analogy is not meant to be, you know, that direct, but when you think about the war for talent, it's darn hard. It's really darn hard, and you presidents, general managers, HR folks that are sitting back and being smug, that candidate ought to feel just darn lucky to work for us. You'll probably not get most of your positions filled. I'll tell you a quick war story. The Dodgers landed Freddie Freeman yesterday. Wahoo. I'm a huge Dodger fan. I love that. We landed a big fish yesterday for our client. Our client's about a $20 million manufacturing company in the aerospace and defense industry. And I'll be a little bit vague on this because the guy just accepted. He still has to give notice, and he'll start here in a few weeks. But this is a roll-up of three or four companies. They've got $10 million worth of machinery on the dock that none of their current execs, current management, know how to operate. So we had an offer out to our preferred candidate. As you start with several hundred people, you boil it down to a few dozen, and we get our final three, and we settled on the one we wanted. That first offer was rejected. So the offer went from some 300 in, actually 400 in base and bonus, and a lower percentage of equity. So the offer that was accepted yesterday is in excess of $500,000, in excess of 60% more of equity than what they were originally offered. And there's some other kickers in that. They figured this $30 million company needed the right executive to run for it and make it happen and lead this to results. And what they've done then with this executive is they've gotten their guy, could have been a lady, they've got their person to run it, and they stepped up in the tune of about another 30% in package and another 60% in equity to put the deal together. So that's the war on talent these days. I would comment overall, I think we are about back to pre-COVID conditions where the supply of great executives, that supply was much smaller than what the demand had. We routinely had our final candidates have four or five or six other offers pre-COVID. Now we're seeing two to three other offers. A year ago, there were no other offers. So I think that trend is continuing.
Thank you all. So continuing on this, what are employees or potential employees looking for? So there's a couple elements that I want to understand, or we should understand. So are you seeing more retirements and loss of critical skills? One of the data points I came up with is that 84% of employees are looking, which sounds really high to me. I mean, that's just kind of shocking when you think about it. If you walk through your company and you think 84% of the people, 8 out of 10 people you say hello to are looking. So that's pretty shocking. So are you seeing increased people leaving from your company? Are you having losses of retirement of critical skills? Is that a factor? And for the people that are leaving, or the people you're trying to retain, what are the key elements they're looking for? Are they looking to be closer to home? Are they just looking for higher pay? I hadn't been aware of this till I read about it. Asynchronous work, which means you get to work when you want to work, from where you want to work. Of course, if you're putting parts together, that's not going to happen. Well, maybe it could happen. Maybe they do in the garage. I'm not sure, right? So we talk about being flexible. So what are these key things that you're seeing with your existing workforce? Are they leaving? Are they asking in for raises? Are you losing critical skills? And for the people you're trying to hire, what are the specific things that you're seeing? Or maybe are they saying, you know, I need to find a company that's more aligned with my values. And we'll start with Kimberly. Let's see if this mic works.
Can you guys hear me? Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Yes, we're seeing all of that, especially the aging workforce and retirements. For example, specifically where I'm at, I've had 6 retirement announcements in the last 5 weeks. Yeah. And they're very specialized craftsmen in their field. Whether it be, for example, welders, machinists, you know, it's a challenge. And it's also a dying breed. So we're trying to kind of look at some of the programs specifically here at COC. You know, generally we're in our environment, we're a high mix, low volume environment, pretty complex. And we usually want that type of talent to come in with a lot of experience. Now we're having to pivot. We're having to consider, you know, giving opportunities and building these young people coming out of these programs, because there's a lot of good programs out there. and considering, you know, we can build them up. And, for example, we have five-axis machines. A lot of them coming out of the programs are running two- and three-axis machines. Well, we can that can be taught. We can teach them. So we're having to look at those things we wouldn't have considered before. We are getting resignations overall. I've also had, since December 1st, I've had five people leave the state of California. So there is an exodus from California. As far as that is one of the first questions that we hear from candidates today, you know, not so much on the production floor positions, but overall, do I have to be there every day? Do I have to, you know, can I just come in when you need me? And before that would have been an absolute no, but those are things that are having to be reconsidered because of the environment. That's what I would say overall. We're going to have to really focus on training and development because I think, as you mentioned earlier, we're going to have to take talent that's not 100% hitting all those bullets, but be able to work and develop. And I actually think in the long run that might be to our benefit. You know, we'll have a certain degree of loyalty for that. Okay. That's my hope.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Deborah, what are you seeing from the people you're trying to recruit? What are they specifically asking for?
Number one, working remote. Younger people, especially college grads. My neighbors, for example, have a young college grad with an HR degree, wants to work 100% remote. Like, how is that possible? You know, you need to meet people. But I tried to educate her. She's still trying to hang tough. That and the mass exodus, we are like Kimberly said, learning, they need to train up people. But a long time ago, back in the 90s, we had an incredible shortage of electronics people. And I worked with a school, and we developed a training program, a fast track, similar to what COC has, a program for electronics technicians and people to do that type of work. We gave them basic skills tests, and we had to develop these people, and they were getting hired faster than we can create them. And so I think this is where we're going to end up heading, is taking unskilled people and putting them through fast training programs, even for assemblers. But on the higher level, we are privy to, especially me, I'm out in the field meeting with all the customers and executives and management. And people say to me on the side, hey, if you know some other company offering that has openings for someone like me. They share that with me. I have a policy. I don't recruit from customers. So don't worry, I won't do that to you. But it's happening. It's kind of the way I see it is people are changing positions and hoping for something better. They want more vacation time. They want more benefits. They want more liberties. They want to be able to work when they want to. It's all of the above. We're having to be very creative in this. We have, I even had one candidate negotiate how much the employer is going to pay on their benefits. You know, employer pays 100% of the employee's benefit. Well, this candidate's like, well, I only want to pay out of pocket $500 a month. That's, you know, crazy things like that. So we're having to be very creative. We're encouraging our clients to be creative so we can fill their positions. It's been an interesting time out there. Like Gary said, it's war out there. And, of course, I'm here to support my clients, and I'm happy to sit down with them and come up with ideas on how we can fill their roles. We are trying to recruit people from out of state, kind of a challenge. So some of our customers may have to pay for relocation expenses. Those are just some of the challenges, but we're working on it.
All right, thank you. So let's turn it over to Gary, and I want to ask a related question, because what I'm hearing is, from an executive recruiter standpoint, paying for somebody to move, stock options, et cetera, that's more the norm, but it sounds like folks that are at lower levels are starting to ask for things that you would normally expect for people to get at higher levels. And Gary, so have you seen a change in what executives are looking for with their positions versus 2 years ago? Has there been a big change there?
The big change, I think, is this. You got a new norm out there. COVID has changed a lot of the paradigms that we've operated on for a long time. And so as you get someone, and most of the people we're contacting, you know, I guess our average would be people in the 150 to 300 range would be where we do most of our search work. And so if they're employed, they're happy, they've got a good boss, they've got their career pretty well charted out, it's really tough to get them to talk to you. But the confidentiality brand that we have as an executive recruiter, you know, gives them protection and gives their company protection. But the point, I think, is this. You get the phone call with someone and he or she says, look, let me get my door. Yes, I'd like to talk. And the first three or four reasons oftentimes would be number one and number two would be a bad boss. I've got this jerk boss that just doesn't treat me very well, doesn't appreciate me, and I don't know that I really make a difference. I don't know that I'm really aligned with the big picture. Number two, the comp, I think I'm out of alignment with what the market is. You know, as is attested to the fact that many of our candidates, when they get the offer, that company then throws another 50 grand at them to say, hey, we love you, stay with us. You know, when in fact, you know, I was worth that yesterday, right? You didn't pay me. And so they listen. I want to speak to the relocation piece of it. This is a mess. This is hard. This is more difficult than it was 3 years ago by several factors, I think, with COVID, with children, and real estate. You've got a lot of real estate areas. The supply side of homes is just brutal. We have six offers active right now. Two of those as quick examples. We're moving an executive from St. Joseph, Michigan. I kept thinking St. Joseph was in Wisconsin, corrected that. And we're moving this person to Tucson. Now, he's going to be getting a package in excess of $400, and his spouse makes more than that. And they have two young children. And the homes they were looking at, there were only three or four viable ones in that particular area. And so we aligned with a mortgage broker to get them qualified so they can walk in and be serious. And just this last weekend, a new one came on the market on Saturday. They had an offer to them by Saturday night. They negotiated the differences on Sunday. And this person is starting with my client next it is this coming Tuesday. Now, how does that all happen? You know, you got to handhold the folks that are doing the moving and the families that are being uprooted. So I think that personalization, it's a war. There's five other companies out there wanting that same executive. You know, they happen to get right on the spot and get the home they wanted because they were there and did it. I would encourage those of you that take weeks to go through the candidate process. You know, it's like guests that stay too long. It's like fish on the shelf. After a few days, you know, it's not so good.
Right. Thank you, Gary.
Analogy, right? I completely agree. I mean, we just recently just extended an offer to a candidate in Texas, but we moved quickly. We brought him in. We flew him in last Friday. We made the offer yesterday. We put it. Yeah, obviously, we had to put a relocation in there. He had some. Reasons for wanting to come to California, so that was a win for us. He had some personal reasons, but we still had to invest in it. And that position, that particular position, we've been looking for over 6 months.
So let me touch upon that. So part of what I see and personally have experienced is you can't get the people you need. So the people that are left, that are at the company, are working, I assume, overtime, lots of time. Some stuff isn't getting done. So there's an increased cost of not only recruiting and bringing somebody on board, increased cost of losing people, but there's a level of cost for the employees that are there trying to keep up.
Yeah, right now our overtime is doubled from what we projected because we're down. We've got 48 recs open right now, so we are down quite a bit in bodies for sure.
And I imagine that many of the companies, especially manufacturing companies, that are struggling getting the right people to do the work are struggling with the overtime, and then it starts to hit your quality. It starts to hit your on-time delivery, and that puts you at risk with your customers. So it is pretty challenging. So on that happy note, let's go on to the next section. So here we are. We've got a sense of how we got to where we are. We have a sense of what the landscape is and what people are looking for. The next question is, we've touched upon a little bit, so what do we do about this? What are the key elements that we take and we apply? And Gary's talked about it. We've all talked about it a little bit, that help you get those people on the bus. And Deborah's going to start, or unless Kim wants to. Go ahead, Deborah. She grabbed for the mic.
Okay. You know, one thing I meant to mention, that I am privy to hearing information from various people, executives, line managers, is people are tired. We've dealt with COVID for 2 years. The line managers that are short help right now, and I'm talking to our manufacturing folks out here, are exhausted. They don't feel appreciated, and so a lot of them are looking for new roles. The only thing I can offer as a suggestion is talking to them, finding out where they're at mentally, because a lot of these people are leaving because they're mentally exhausted. They're struggling for help in their departments, and I think they just really need to feel appreciated and recognized. And I know financial rewards, you know, offering them more money to stay will help. I mean, there's a couple of companies here that I know of that happening, and I'm trying to encourage those people to stay because, you know, you're my clients, and I already know how hard it's going to be to replace those people. So one of the things I would say is to check in with your line managers, check in with the people on the floor, see how they're doing, because I think a lot of them are overstressed, overworked, and they don't know what else to do. They really want to do a good job and be committed to their employer, and they don't really want to leave. Nobody wants to leave their job. It's too much, you know, it's a hassle to go on interviews and get their resume out there. And so they really would rather stay where they're at, but they also want to feel appreciated and respected and heard. So that's something I want to throw out there. It's a little edgy, but it's the truth. And so I as much as I love working with all of you and taking your money to fill your positions, I would much rather you keep your people that you have there because, you know, it'll be easier for you. And it's a challenge out there even for us to find people. So anyway, my tangent.
I think that's good because we've got two aspects. One is retention. The other one is filling the spots that are open and trying not to create more spots that are open. So Gary's touched upon, why do I leave my job? Well, my boss is a jerk. And that's in general, and I don't think that's changed in the last X amount of years. I think that's been, at least from the research I've read, the major reason that people leave, or one of the primary reasons is their boss doesn't treat them the way they feel they should be treated. So pay, of course, is a factor. And my experience is if you're making $15 an hour or $16 an hour and you can go somewhere and get $18 an hour, you're probably leaving no matter how good your boss is, because that's a big deal. So the pay is a factor. It depends on where you are on the pay scale, I think, about how much. But the overall environment, and then I'm going to ask Kimberly what her thoughts are about retention. So what do you do to keep the people that you have? And then we'll talk a little bit more about how do you get more people on your bus.
Well, I completely agree with what Deborah said regarding recognition. And I think it doesn't take a whole lot. People want to be heard. I think where I'm seeing a lot of the impact is on our supervisors, because they're kind of in that middle ground, so they're feeling it from both sides. So I think it's important to do a check-in as an HR professional, partnering with your partners, and then going down their line, doing step meetings, you know, checking in on people. It really builds them up to feel that, you know, someone's asking me my opinion on something. You know, someone cares about me. As far as recognition, like I said, just little tokens, gestures of appreciation. Doesn't take a whole lot, but it does get people excited. As far as when you have a candidate and an offer out, you have to really you have to work really hard to keep them on the hook. So if you've got a 2-week gap for someone coming in with you, I wouldn't let that 2 weeks go. I would be checking in with them every few days. How's it going? You know, you tying up at your old job? You know, you working through? I would build that relationship, because the way it's happening now, I think one of you mentioned, counter offers are big. You know, so when they go to their employer and, you know, we get countered. So it's maintaining that relationship to make sure you keep, after they accept, it's not done. You've got to keep them on the hook until you get them in your house.
Right. So I've been in manufacturing most of my career, and as an executive or VP of operations, one of the things that happens if you're not careful is you get trapped in your office, and that's not good. You, as a supervisor, as a leader, as a manager, you've got to set aside time to go out, be seen, talk with people. You don't have to completely understand everything about their entire lives, but as you said, Kimberly, you got to let them know that you're aware of them, you know who they are, you know their name, and you're interested in what's going on with them and gathering their feedback. And the goal is to get them, is to keep them getting to the point where they're going to look for a job. So it is challenging, but it's tough, and because the executives too are overwhelmed. They're working 10, 11, 12, 13 hours a day. They're taking stuff home and working on weekends. But if the people working for you aren't happy, they're not going to be productive, and then you're going to lose them, and you're going to be worse off. So you've got to set aside time, your supervisors, to walk the line, whether it's the office or the factory, and talk with people, see how they're doing, get some feedback, show them that you care. And then, as you say, that just that recognition, sometimes it's just walking up and talk to them. And there's, you might be surprised that, depending how large the company is, you know, if you've got 200, 300 people, if the general manager or somebody from the higher up walks through and recognizes somebody and calls them by name, that's a positive. So is there any more, Kimberly? All right.
Just a simple thank you goes a long way.
Yeah. And as we get under pressure, sometimes we forget. So we have a few more minutes here. Then we're going to go to some questions. So if we can narrow down, you know, what are the main things when recruiting that make a difference? And what I've heard is Gary's analogy, you know, don't let something sit on the shelf. And Kimberly's point was stay in contact, right? I've looked for a handful of jobs. So what was really annoying was I wouldn't hear from somebody for 2 or 3 weeks. I'd think, okay, well, clearly I'm not important, or I'm not on the list, or I moved on. So staying on top and staying in touch. Hey, we're interested in having you come. We're going to stay in touch. Yeah, it's taking longer than we wanted, so on and so forth. Are there critical elements in the offer that you're finding you've got to give to folks to get them on board? Is it just speed? Is it specific things that have changed? Is it flexibility? Is it a combination of things? What are you finding, Kimberly?
It's all of those things. And it depends on the candidate. Every candidate's different. But I think it's a combination of everything you just mentioned.
Okay, so, and listening to what they're, because what I heard was listen to what they're asking for, because they're different. And don't assume, like Gary said, that, oh, we got a great place. Of course they're going to want to work here.
Don't settle. Do not settle if you are the company. We've got a client here in Southern California just hired a head of operations. They were really clear on what their business wanted and needed and had to have. They also had a comp range that they hoped would happen, but the president said, look, we're going to get the one we want. If he or she doesn't exactly fit into that, then we're running a $50 million business here. Frankly, what is another 10 or 20 grand one way or another? Not that that's trivial, but it is in the midst of trying to think about your $50 million business. So don't settle. Be clear. We have Holly, you mentioned 11 million people in LA County. Is that close to being the right number? Between 10 and 11. That example of the relocation I just spoke about from St. Joseph, Michigan to Arizona cost that company just by policy more than $150,000. So if you could find that person locally and it cost you a bit more, St. Joseph, Michigan is what, maybe a B or C level cost of living area. And we're double A or triple A here, or God forbid if you get close to the beach, it's nowhere. So I think being clear on what you have to have and then being quickly responsive. Most of my work is going to happen at night, Saturdays and Sundays, with texts and follow-ups and family powwows as to whether he or she's going to say yes. And then don't just think just because they said yes, your deal's over. Giving notice, saying no to that $40,000 bump that they just got from their same company where they've worked for 10 years and they're so supposedly appreciated and they just now are worth $40,000 more. Well, some F-bombs go off in your mind to think, you know, that just doesn't seem right. So I think the settling and I think the quick response, and if that boss or that boss's boss or that CEO calls that candidate and tells him or her, we need you, we want you, and here's our business, and here's where you're going to make a difference. That communication piece that my fellow panelists are talking about is huge, especially huge at the right levels.
Anything else we want to add before we go to the questions?
I just want to mention in our recruiting process, we're in constant contact with the candidates and touching on what Gary stated earlier. We also ask our candidates, so where else are you interviewing? What else do you have going on? When's your next interview? How's that going? And we find out where they're at in their process. So what do you think about that company? Do you think this is the type of work you want to be doing? And because this helps us, especially if we have the candidate for our client and we know they're going to be a good fit, we want to make sure that they understand that they're a good fit for our client. So constantly reassuring them, the flexibility, that's a definite huge one these days. And I like the finishing touch of the CEO welcoming them to the company. I think that's a great thing. So those are some of the things that we're having to do, dealing with the counter offers. I've even gone as far as writing the resignation letter for them to make sure it's done and having them call me as soon as they've done it. And also going through the, okay, they're going to counter offer you, and you probably do this with your candidates as well, Gary, is going through the counter offer process. Okay, so what if they offer you $40,000 more? What if they offer you $50,000 more? Do you really want to stay? I mean, you know, remember what you don't like about this company. So we have to go through this over and over again just to make sure that our we call them deals, happen. Because we have lost candidates to counter offers and to a better paying opportunity. So I say stay in touch with your candidates, like Gary mentioned, is very important these days.
Okay, so let's see if there's any questions from the floor. And we have one. Hold on, please. John?
Thank you, Eric. Thank you all for being here. First off, I wanted to say College of the Canyons is here for our business and industry partners in Santa Clarita Valley and the region extending. We're actually coming back strong to help and assist in these areas. Several things come to mind, and I do have a question, but I just wanted to make sure I let you know that there's a lot going on at the college to address this very issue with that we know our companies and our partner companies here in the Valley are experiencing. We're rebranding and adding resources to what we used to call career services here. Now it's the Employment Center, and it will grow in its reach and ability to connect employers with students, graduating students, students completing certification programs, and so forth. And we have welding. We're bringing on manufacturing technology, construction technology, and other areas too. Of course, our culinary institute and various other things. So there's that side of reaching the 30,000 college students here in hybrid and online and in person, as well as, of course, community members. And College of the Canyons has always been a place for community members to come to. And, of course, our partnership with Holly and the SCVDDC and the other organizations in town. Also, we're currently right now leasing a building to build an advanced technology center that will focus on technician training, potentially CNC mechanic, CNC operator, and industrial maintenance technologies, also IT pathways and potentially some of the areas that would be in potentially cloud computing, cybersecurity, things like that that are important to our local industry. So that's coming online soon. So we're in the process of ramping up to be able to develop the pipeline of people that you need. And that a lot of those could start out as fast-track programs. So it's that fast-track model like Deborah mentioned, where we're taking people, we'd say off the street, so to speak, unemployed, underemployed individuals that have the capability, talent, and interest, but don't have any experience yet, maybe. And then training them in an accelerated fashion, getting them ready for work in a partnership with our companies and customizing those programs so that you have individuals come out of that program that are the best possible fit that we can give you in a short amount of time. We have to train and upskill them and then provide funding and programs to continue that continuous learning with those individuals as you take them on and have to onboard them. And you're speaking so well about how adapting and pivoting to working with people, and maybe I think Kimberly's point was so wonderful that there could be actually long-term loyalty built into this because you invested in those people and you gave them a chance where they didn't hit every bullet point. They never would have had a chance at that job before, but now you're developing them. So my question was, are you looking at also streamlining processes internally, hiring processes? Of course, I think you're talking to that. But other processes, so that as you combine job descriptions or you might have to combine job functions that ultimately might result in different job descriptions, are you looking at that as well? Are there opportunities to essentially get more out of your workforce through streamlining, through looking, are there redundancies, things that you historically just never changed that you might consider changing now in within the organization? And then that would also help develop those folks as you, you know, as you work with those internally. So I was wondering if you'd speak to that just a little bit.
Thank you, John. So I think this is for Kimberly. You know, so how do you increase, are you increasing, taking steps to increase productivity and streamline operations?
Yes, that's the priority for us. I mean, we're always, that's always a moving target, something we're always working on as far as, you know, implementing, reevaluating, and especially through the COVID and through this war on talent that we're going through, we have no choice. We have to do those things. But yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you both. Holly's got a question.
With regard to remote work and the request for many prospects and existing employees to want to work remotely when they have those types of jobs, how does that blend with the workers who are on your production floor? I've heard from a few companies that they're saying, hey, I got to be here. How come they don't have to be here? And it kind of becomes a culture issue. So what are you seeing in your company or in your clients, and how are companies addressing that sort of culture and maintaining culture during if they do have remote workers?
As far as our production floor, that's a great question because that's come up many times. In our environment right now, it's not typical that we don't have a huge remote workforce. We've implemented a certain degree of flexibility, but for that reason, it's just been the culture, and again, it's something that's going to have to be evaluated. It's not just a local culture of ITT. You know, it's a global organization. I think it's its overall culture that, you know, we're a production organization, we're a manufacturer. You know, you need to be here. And that's what's been being looked at. It's not advertised and taunted like we have all these people that work from home and you have to be on the production floor. It's not like a widely publicized advertised thing at this point throughout the facility. We don't have, I'm trying to think if we have anyone that's 100% work from home. We're not. Again, those are these are the challenges we're starting to see as we start to ramp back up. Because when we had, unfortunately, when we had to make cuts during COVID, we had to cut, as someone else here had mentioned, had to cut very deep. And now we're trying to really hustle to get back up there. So it's just now that we're addressing, you know, these challenges and what we're going to have to do to make things better and at least offer some degree of flexibility. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not finding in candidates that they necessarily expect 100% remote. The key word is hybrid and flexibility.
Okay, and we've just got a couple minutes here. There's just a couple questions on the chat. The first question is from Ivan, and it's, have you considered the Uniquely Abled Academy? And I'm aware of that, of what Ivan has created. He's worked with College of the Canyons here. And this is training individuals with level one autism and they're CNC machine operators, and they end up being extremely good machine operators. So if you're not aware of that, you should be aware of that. And Kimberly's got the mic in her hand.
Yes, we're very aware of it. I've interviewed several of the candidates before COVID. I think it's a wonderful program. We did try one of the students that graduated from there. Again, this was before COVID. So I think we were still in that mindset of, well, they don't have A, B, C, D. They've never run this kind of machine. We'll give it a try. And I think we weren't internally, we weren't set up to make that type of person successful. And that's what we're looking at now. With the accelerated program, both Uniquely Abled and the typical accelerated program, we're having to pivot regardless of either one of those programs. I think they're bringing strong candidates out of them, but we have to be internally set up to support success in those areas.
Okay, thank you. And the last question is for Kimberly. Do you see increased investments in your organization with respect to transparent succession planning and more levels of roles to assist in retention, employees' retention, so people can see a career path?
That's another big thing that we're being asked about a lot for either people coming in. Well, if I come in and I take this position, what's that going to look like? What are my avenues of progression? And then our high potential employees, as long as key talent that we have now. We do have a very, in our environment, we do have a very formalized succession planning, annual succession plan. So, yeah, that's constantly being looked at and evaluated, and development plans are made from there.
Okay, super. So we're going to wrap up here. I want to thank our panelists, I think, for a tremendous discussion. And the folks that have shown up here at upcoming chapter webinars and meetings, March 30, U.S. Navy Fleet Outlook, Trends and Supply Chain Implications. And that's the Los Angeles chapter, March 31, 11 o'clock to 12 o'clock, FBI cybersecurity briefing for A&D company executives. Okay, that sounds important and sounds scary. That's the San Diego chapter, April 20, Value Drivers for Your Business and Merger and Acquisition. And that's with Andrew Williamson from Calabasas Capital. That's a national online forum. And for those that aren't familiar with the A&D forum, you're going to hear and learn a lot of very valuable things through these forums, as well as the valuable networking. So on the last slide, please. Again, individual membership is $350 a year, free attendance at all webinars and seminars. If you're not near a chapter, anywhere near a chapter, it actually, membership is free. There's recordings of this will be online, and all the previous meetings recordings are available, over 250 of those recordings, all sorts of topics. You can join the mailing list for free. It also give you a monthly newsletter, and there's opportunities to sponsor. So please rush to the door and give us a sponsorship. More webinars are available. And for more information, you can go to the website, aerospacedefenseforum.org. I think there's one more slide, Lanise, and thank you so much. Lanise has been helping us with the logistics in the background. And the last slide is thank you so much for your attendance in person and online.